Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Ultimate MMA Podcast. I'm show producer and occasional co-host Liam Heffernan, taking the reins as we look back on a crazy 2020. In a year when the whole world came to a standstill, it was MMA which spearheaded the return of live sports. Fight Island evolved from a Twitter hashtag to reality within months, and amidst all the chaos and uncertainty brought by a global pandemic, there have been some truly memorable moments to celebrate, from showstoppers to snooze fests, old legends retiring to new prospects exploding into the octagon, and just for good measure, some of the most spectacular fights we have ever seen. On this episode, we celebrate what a unique year 2020 was, with the first inaugural UMMA Herb Awards, and for the first time ever, the entire UMMA team are here. So, they don't need any introduction, but let's do it anyway. Sean Gilley, great to finally meet you on a podcast.
Likewise, mate. Likewise.
And of course, it wouldn't be the Ultimate MMA Podcast without Jake Jones. How are you doing?
I'm very good, but I think I'm out of a job because you have just introduced it perfectly. You guys take the reins from here. I am done. No, but I'm very well, mate. Christmas was fantastic. New Year's even better. So happy and looking forward to a better 2021 than 2020 was.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So for anyone listening, let's quickly run down how this episode is going to work. So we have a few categories that we're going to dish out throughout the show. We're going to go through each one in turn, and each of us are going to nominate someone to win that category. And where we differ, we will debate, we will argue, we will fight to the death until we can agree on who the clear winner is. So without any further ado, let's carry on. Or start, I should say. The first category that we need to decide is the best debut of 2020. So, let's throw over to Sean. Who you got for this?
Jake's like, I love this. I'm going to pick Chimaev.
Right, I'm done.
Interesting. Is that who you've gone for as well, Jake?
No, no, far away, Sean. Oh. Do your explanation. Go on.
Mate. I don't want to. You've got to give it to him, haven't you? Like, he comes into the UFC thinking he's Khabib, knock, like, takes people out in 20 seconds, 19 seconds, man. You can't, like, that's it. What can you say? There's not really much you can see on him because he walks in, does it in 19 seconds and walks back out.
Yeah. I mean, what else can you say? I'm hoping that we have some sort of suspense in this category, so I'm going to throw mine out there right now. I've also gone for Chimaev.
Yes. Oh, dear.
Oh, you guys are just fanboys, aren't you? You just follow the trend. Is that it? But I think we can all agree on this one. Yeah, I've gone for Chimaev. I think this is pretty much the breakthrough fight of the year award, isn't it? And I'm pretty sure Khabib has won that absolutely everywhere in the MMA world. Can you blame him? Literally every site that I've seen have said Khabib is their breakthrough or their debut fighter. Yeah. His debut against John Phillips was incredible. To dominate a seasoned veteran like that was insane. And to test yourself against a guy with, what was it, like a 91% KO ratio? That's amazing. And I know there's people saying about Phillips not having the wrestling ability, and yet it was an easy fight for Chimaev, but if you're coming in there against a guy like Phillips, his nickname is the Welsh Wrecking Machine. Yeah, like, he landed two punches in the entire fight. You cannot say that Chimaev's debut was not deserving of what the year followed for him. He got performance of the night for that fight. I think he got the performance of the night for the Reese McKee fight and the Mershart fight. So he ends 2020 with the fastest KO, with the 17-second one-punch KO to Mershart. He's got three performance night bonuses across, was it, two different weight divisions?
Yep.
You cannot argue, 9-0. He had a matchup with Leon cancelled, and as I said, you just can't argue that this year has been Chimaev's year, especially.
Yeah. Didn't he also have the record now of the fastest
turnaround? Yep.
Yeah, like, because he got three UFC wins in the shortest time or something.
Yeah, I think a 10-day turnaround. Yeah, it was 10 days, and it's the fastest turnaround between UFC wins in modern era.
Yeah, so that's crazy.
That's insane. But I mean, just to spice things up, I think there is some honourable mentions with Chaos Williams versus Alex Morono. That was an insane knockout. I think that was 20 seconds again or something. And then what went on for his year? You had Brandon Royval as well versus Tim Elliott, and then Yuri Prochazka versus Volkan Ozdemir. That's another one you've got to mention. But I mean, I'll hand it over to you, Liam, but I think we can all agree who takes the best debut award.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a formality, right? The 2020 Herb Award for best debut, without question, goes to Khamzat Chimaev.
Love it. What's the next one?
I'm hoping this is not all as quick as this, because it's going to be a very short episode.
Oh, I can make it longer, don't I? Just, I'll go into some deep depths.
Yeah. Okay, let's do the best finish of 2020. Jake.
Well, you've also stopped in the second one, though, which is probably going to be an unanimous decision, am I right? I mean, I'm going for jumping spinning back kick by Joaquin Buckley versus Impa Kasanganai. That was, for me, this is another one you can't dispute. It was an absolutely breathtaking KO. It was insane. As I'm assuming you guys have the same one, or if anyone has any others, say it now.
I agree. I think we're all going to agree. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're 3-3, aren't we? Yeah.
I mean, I think even if you take it, his debut against Kevin Holland, you thought, this guy can swing. He lost that fight with Kevin, but even throughout that fight, you were like, yeah, this guy swings heavy. He's going to knock someone out. But we did not see that coming. Nobody saw this coming. Impa Kasanganai certainly didn't see that coming. Like, it was the most picture-perfect spinning kick knockout that I genuinely think we might ever see. The only thing I can ever see topping that is if someone can do it from, like, moving. I'm actually doing it running. If not, I just don't know how you're going to top that.
Yeah.
I've seen Mark Chiquese do it once in his fight against Timu Pakalin. He literally kind of ran in and did a two-touch spinning kick. I mean, if you can land that, that might take it, but this goes down as probably the sweetest KO ever, or at least in the top three. Yeah. It's just one of them. It's like, it's on the line of the Rolling Thunder finish that happened to Ross Pearson or the Showtime Pettis kick. It's just one of them freak show moments where a fighter pulls something out of the bag that you genuinely couldn't write at all.
Yeah.
Far away, yeah.
I think for me, I completely agree, and I think we're all on the same page here. That's a knockout you can watch over and over again, and it is incredible. But I'm going to call out here who I think should have been a close contender for this. Kevin Holland, towards the end of the year, his fight against Souza. Yeah.
Jacare Souza, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, when he knocks the guy out from, like, who does that from the position he was in? That was incredible.
Kevin Holland does that. I mean, that's similar to, as well. Wait, have you seen Nico Price's knockout to Randy Brown, I think his name is, where he, like, hooks his foot onto his head and just starts hammer fisting on the box?
Yeah.
It's like that. It's one of them knockouts as well where you just kind of go, hold on, I need to see that again. And you keep watching, you go, no, how's he generated the power? No, watch it again, and you just keep replaying it because it's like, it is once more an amazing knockout. And I think that's why the knockouts that we're talking about now, that's what differentiates them from any other knockout, is these are just unorthodox. They're just unique.
Yeah.
It's not like a head kick, like a crow crop head kick, where it pretty much takes the head off. It's not about the power necessarily generated in them. It's about literally watching it and your jaw dropping. I remember watching Buckley's knockout and literally just being like, no, that's not, I haven't seen that happen. Like, I have not just watched this. So I literally recorded it straight on my phone just to put it online straight away to be like, that is one of them knockouts you just cannot believe that you've just seen.
Yeah.
And I think to just freshen up, I guess, on the reason, I guess, Buckley's goes further, is just because, although I agree that Holland knockout was good, you almost saw that happen over 10 seconds. You saw Souza get rocked a bit, and then he kind of was able to get to his feet and then knock him out. And it was more just from the position that left you shocked.
Mm.
But also, it's Kasanganai's reaction to how he got knocked out. Literally, he just, it's like a video game. He freezes for a second, the eyes roll back, and then just, you could put fatality on that, and it would fit perfectly. It's a one in a million knockout. And then obviously as well, for Buckley, how he followed up the year, the KO over Jordan Wright was also incredibly impressive. And I think now he just puts himself in that position that no one in the middleweight division wants to fight with him, or at least I certainly wouldn't. And I think in the future, we're going to see so many more scary knockouts from him, because I said it earlier, he's almost got this Tyson-esque style, the way he throws his strikes.
Hmm.
Then if you can throw them kicks in there like he does, it's night-night, lights out. But as I said...
Yeah. I think with Buckley, though, the question mark now is what happens if someone does take him the full three rounds, because he comes out all guns blazing. He's going for that knockout. And like, he got to, was it round two with Kasanganai? But what if he fights someone a lot smarter who's ready for that and really wears him down? You know, what if he starts gassing? What happens then?
Well, he did. He fought Kevin Holland, didn't
Kevin
he?
Holland, yeah.
And Kevin Holland knocked him out. Like, there's a danger with having that type of style. But equally, I guess what works in your favour is if you can knock someone out in such quick, like, fashion. Take Ngannou, for example. Ngannou can just knock people out. That's what, it's not necessarily about his all-round skill. It's about the power, the freak power that he possesses. And as I said, if Buckley kind of has that same power at middleweight, maybe he doesn't need the three rounds, because yes, someone might be able to take him there, but if he can counter that and be like, yeah, well, try and get through a round with me, that adds a nice narrative to every one of his fights. So if someone can get past that round, Buckley might be beaten again. Mm-hmm. But if they're not, then we're just going to see another freak knockout.
Yeah. Don't get PFO all my time.
I guess, like, quick predictions. Who do you think they're going to put Buckley up against next?
I think an unranked opponent.
Yeah.
You reckon?
Yeah. I don't think... He's one of the fighters where, I guess, it's like... what's his name? The guy, Chaos Williams and Michel Pereira. Chaos was knocking out people where you're like, shit, this guy's insane. And then his third fight in, he still gets someone who's relatively... Yes, Pereira's a big name, but he's not that top 15 guy you're kind of expecting. So I reckon we're going to get Buckley on a main card for something, maybe even co-main, but I don't think it's going to be a middleweight ranked fighter. I think they'll just give him someone who we're kind of just used to seeing, maybe even more of a veteran of the sport, because at the moment we've seen him face guys who Jordan Wright was 11-0, and then Kasanganai was 8-0. They were still quite up and coming fighters. I think we might see him get someone like Brad Tavares or you know, that type of fighter who's on the verge of the top 15, or has at least four people in that top 15, but isn't it just there right now?
That's what a good chance. Yeah, I think you're right. I didn't have anyone specific in mind, but I was thinking it's got to be someone with more experience. It's got to be someone where he can really prove himself, because I get the rationale in giving him an unranked fighter, but that's almost like just... it's like fodder for him, and it won't really do much for his standing. I think he needs to take that leap up now and prove that he can beat one of the top fighters, whether that's someone who's higher ranked or just someone with a lot of experience under their belt. I think that's his next step.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
All right.
What's our next one?
So the next one is the biggest letdown. So this could be a fight, this could be a fighter. What you got, Sean?
Trinaldo versus Herbert, was that?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. That Herb Dean letdown, man. Oh my god, with Dan Hardy.
Oh, I like it.
Oh yeah, he did it. He did it. Yeah. Them unnecessary punches, man, were just uncalled for. Shouldn't have done that. Dan Hardy's got a point, like, protect the fighters, like, we run the back. Fighter safety is main priority, and that for me was the biggest letdown of the year.
Good shout.
I mean, yeah, wow. I love the fact that you kind of... I always think about fights, but yeah, that is such a good point to make, that the Herb Dean let it down there as well.
How
don't get me wrong,
the
result. the result itself was... I know a lot of people wanted Jai to win that, so that was a letdown. But actually, yeah, the whole aftermath that led from it does hold some very, very good. Good weigh in my now my decision in this.
Yeah, you've definitely gone in a different direction to me. I went for the Adesanya Romero fight back in March, purely because of how disappointing that was as a pay per view headliner, and what should have been on paper one of the best title fights of the year. It was. I think they both did themselves a lot of injustice there. Adesanya in how safe he played it, and Romero just in how little he really tried to take the fight to Adesanya. So for me, that's my nomination.
Ooh! Well, we all do have different nominations then for this category. I mean, Sean, you've gone in a completely separate direction than what I thought. And Liam, yours is equally, it's a slightly different direction to where I've gone. So... where to start with me? I'd like to say that this was actually my retirement fight this year. So thank you guys for standing by me through my short but sweet MMA career. But my pick was Agapova versus Shayna Dobson. Ooh. August 22nd. Yeah. This is the
I'm
fight
surprised you brought that back up, Jake.
Well, I had to. This is what this end of the year awards is for. I've got to face what I did wrong. And I said, if Agapova loses, I will retire. And she only went and bloody did it, didn't she? Because So the reason this might one is I was looking at this fight saying there's no way she can lose, and I still stand by that. Not in the sense that she actually lost the fight, but why on earth was this matchup made then? Dobson was 3-4. Akhipova was 9-1 and was this young prospect. Dana, Hunter, Sean, Mick, what were you thinking in this fight? Because I remember Agapova's debut against Hannah Cyphers and thinking, shit, this girl is good. Her striking technique was crazy, her body kicks destroyed Cyphers, and her range looked on the level of the very best, and I honestly thought this girl might be a contender for Valentina. She was tall, her kickboxing was immense, her record was good, she's marketable in terms of how she actually presents herself. She demolished a veteran in Cyphers and then finished her by submission. She had everything to say that she might be a future champion. And then she gets a matchup with Shayna Dobson, a guess you could call a UFC veteran, who'd lost her last three fights. Bear in mind, she was 3-4. Get that. Then, this was a fight, I guess, that they thought Agapova could win confidently. But there was so much at stake if Agapova lost this. Her record, her hype train, my bloody career. But I just couldn't understand how Maria was going to lose this. And then what it showed to me was you just can't chuck eggs in one basket. My only saving grace was that Agapova lost this fight herself. She went in there with far too much hype. And I felt that she didn't go in with any sort of control. She just went in head first, expanded her energy and tried to knock Dobson out. And when she couldn't do it, she shot for a takedown, Dobson reverse position and just battered her with ground and pound for an easy TKO victory. This wasn't meant to happen. Agapova would have gone 10-1. It wasn't meant to be Dobson 4-4. I think it put a halt to such an exciting fighter. And for me, whatever happens next, even for Dobson, no disrespect, but who gives a shit? I get that that's completely disrespectful to Dobson, but for me, I just don't get why you would do this fight. Because if Agapova had won this, I think she would have gone on to do something quite good or get a really decent fight. Now that Dobson's won this, as I said, she's 4-4. I don't think you particularly care what's going to happen with her. I just think it really took away from what we could have had a really interesting fight coming up through 2020 and 2021. And this fight alone just let me down for that. So that was my major upset. And Shayna Dobson, I'm sorry for disrespecting you. Please do not come find me and batter me too.
Do you know what? I think that fight... This is where I'm going to start trying to campaign to win this category now. Because I completely agree with you. I think Agapova was a big disappointment in that fight. I think she had an easy opponent, or on paper, what should have been an easy opponent, an easy W for her, and to then move on to bigger and better things. However, I'm going to say, because Dobson won that fight, I think as a whole, it was anything but a letdown. I would argue that actually we got a fight that we could talk about that otherwise would have been very forgettable.
We're going to fight to the death, yeah.
Okay. So what about that one punch that Yoel Romero landed?
Here's the thing about Adesanya Romero. These are two fighters who should have been at the top of their game, right? This was a headline on a pay-per-view event. This was being held up as the fight of the card, and it should have been. Adesanya is at the absolute peak of his career, undefeated. He just won the title a few months earlier. He had something, not necessarily, he didn't have his reputation to prove, but he needed to prove himself as a champion by defending the title. And he played it so safe, it was so boring, and it was so disappointing. Romero as well, he knows better than that. He's a veteran. He's capable of really bringing a fight to someone. Just look at his fight with Costa, I think it was a year previous, which was an absolute barnstormer. This had all the ingredients of a classic fight. It should have been, and it didn't. And it was 25 minutes of my life that I will never get back, and I will always hold it against him.
In fairness, it did bring us that fun button mashing moment where Romero just kind of stood there and started. It was almost like he was running on the spot. And it was like, what's happening, guys? What are you doing? But the only thing I would counter there as well, I do agree that obviously the Costa fight was fantastic. Then before that, you had the Whittaker fight as well. So Romero coming into this was on a 2-fight losing streak. So yes, I do think that obviously, like, it was like, shit, Romero's facing Adesanya. But equally, it was like, actually, this guy's coming off 2 losses and he's getting a title shot. So maybe we did expect a little bit too much from it, just because the way Romero fights, I think everyone's so excited by the fact that he is a freak of nature. So I do get it was a massive disappointment, but I do want to hand it over to Sean as well and say, I also really like Sean's thing, because for me, Jai Herbert was this guy who was, it what, 10-1 coming into it. It was like he was the former champion. Overall, he was this guy just dominating people, coming from Team Renegade as well. So training with the likes of Fabian Edwards, Leon Edwards, and some of the best fighters in the UK especially. And then he, throughout the fight, two rounds, dominating Francisco Trinaldo. And then, literally in the third round, Trinaldo just catches him with a big, I think it was either a left hook or a big overhand right. I think it was a big overhand right, actually. And it was the way he fell.
Yeah, big overhand right, yeah.
Yeah, it was the punches that followed it and everything like that that I thought, shit, this is... It was almost on the verge of disgust, and it was at that rate that you kind of think, yeah, that's not nice to watch now. This isn't... It's never nice watching a person get knocked out, but sometimes you know what they're in there for. But that felt like it went a bit too far. I've met Jai before and interviewed him, and he is a lovely guy. So I think that was part for me as well that I was like, I really wanted this guy to win. I was really engaged in this fight, thinking, yeah, he's done so well here. Oh, what the fuck just happened? Oh, no.
There you go. The biggest letdown of the year.
Then you hear Dan Hardy shouting as well, and you think, I would have to probably cast my vote over to Sean here and say,
I
think I agree, because the aftermath that followed it.
Do you know what? I have to say, I will defend my vote for Adesanya Romero to the hilt, but I think you've got a worthy winner there, Sean. knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, very, very nice. Mm. Do you know that, Liam, when you were saying there that you're going to defend your vote, we just need that meme with The Rock now going, it doesn't matter what you think. Sean takes this round.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great call.
Oh. Right.
So we've got a big category next, and I think there's going to be a lot to talk about on this one. It's the card of the year. So, Jake, over to you.
So, I was stuck in two worlds here to pick between two awesome cards, but there was one pay-per-view between them for me, between UFC 249 and UFC 251. Ooh. So, they were my card of the year, and I struggled making a choice, but I have made a decision. On one card, UFC 249, you had Gaethje versus Ferguson, Cejudo versus Cruz, and Ngannou versus Rozenstruik. And on the other, UFC 251, you had Usman versus Masvidal, Volkanovski versus Holloway, Yan versus Aldo, and Namajunas versus Andrade. So both cards were absolutely stacked with their lineups, and arguably, you could say one was more... There was more riding on one particular card, but I've decided to take my pick on how entertaining the card is on the night, which is why, drumroll please, UFC 249 takes my pick for card of the year. Don't get me wrong, 251 on paper looked more impressive as a lineup, but I think it was what delivered on the night that made me go for 249. Masvidal versus Usman didn't deliver what we wanted, nor did Holloway versus Volkanovski too, whereas Gaethje versus Ferguson was a stunner for the interim title. Cejudo KO'ing Cruz was another shock for the belt, and Ngannou KO'ing Rozenstruik was no shock, but it was certainly a performance and a half and a battle between two absolute titans. Then below these guys, you had Cater's amazing elbow knockout of Jeremy Stephens. Pettis and Cerrone went three rounds. Luque and Price put on an absolutely bloodbath brawl. And Bryce Mitchell utterly dominated Charles Rosa with twisters everywhere and a submission city emerging. There was so much about this card that was thoroughly entertaining. And if you want to try and argue it, I can go into what actually went down on the night that made it awesome. So come on, guys, hit me.
Sean, what you got?
Oh, yeah, we'll go. So I'm going to say UFC 256. They're basically the end of the year card with Figueiredo versus Brandon Moreno.
Yep.
You had Tony Ferguson versus Charles Oliveira, which fucking hell, they broke his arm in half. And you had Kevin Holland, like you were saying, versus... I can't even see his names in that.
Ronald Jacare Souza.
Jacare Souza, man. I was talking shit on the floor, and he just sparked him out, and I was like, holy shit. But then, yeah, I think that is my card of the year, because...
You also had Fazeev versus Moicano.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. He's a... Oh, is anyone thinking about him putting him for Fight of the Year?
Oh, we can't go into that dish yet. That's later, but I must admit, Fazeev is definitely someone who's very entertaining and worth maybe a shout out later on in the show.
Maybe a shout out. Yeah, that's my 256 card of fight of the year, I think. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to throw something out right now because it's not even a one of the numbered pay-per-view events. It is UFC Fight Night, Covington versus Woodley, which happened back in September. Now, I've picked this mainly because even when the card was announced, it had all the makings of a pay-per-view event, in my opinion. You had Covington Woodley headlining, Cowboy and Nico Price as the co-main, Chimaev and Mearshart, Johnny Walker and Ryan Spann, Mackenzie Dern and Randa Markos. These are just the main event fights. And you had a really impressive set of prelims prior to that as well, which delivered and more. I think just in terms of how much it delivered versus expectations, I think this has to be up there as a possible card of the year. And I feel like it's actually quite unfair on all these guys that they weren't part of a pay-per-view event here, because it was incredible. I love the fact that Cowboy and Nico Price went to a draw, because these are two fighters that I think are both quite popular. Nico Price, just because of his ability to put on such a spectacle, and Cowboy because he's Cowboy. I love the fact that they have so much respect between those fighters, and they went all three rounds and ended up in a draw. Covington beating Woodley, I think the fight was always going to be controversial. The fact that he did it by a rib injury and the manner that he won, I thought was just shocking. I think shocking is the only word I can use there. Chimaev is just a beast, and like the 18 second knockout of Mearshart was a highlight of the year, let alone it's going to be on his highlight reel forever. And then Johnny Walker, I'm a massive fan of anyway. So I love the fact that he came out there and beat Ryan Spann in the first round. And of course, Kevin Holland and Darren Stewart was on that card as well. For me, it's right up there.
Well, see, I do get what you mean that it's unfair they weren't on the pay-per-view card, because I was looking at this earlier, actually. I was looking at another fight, UFC Fight Night, Cater versus EJ.
Mm.
So you had Jack Shaw opened that. You had Modestus Bukauskas winning on that. Lerone Murphy, Chimaev beating John Phillips. That was his debut fight. Abdul Razak Alhazan and Munir Lazez, who put on a fantastic bout. Molly McCann fought on the card. Jim Rivera, Cody Starman, Tim Elliott, and then obviously Calvin Cater versus Dan EJ. So it was another one of them fight nights where you go, yeah, shit, these guys, that deserves a pay-per-view card. But I think the reason you get a pay-per-view card as good as some of the ones we've named is because they do stack up the lineups. I do get as well that maybe the performances of the night don't go as well, which is why I kind of included 251 in there. That's one of them cards that you think, shit, yeah, this is going to break loads of pay-per-view records. Like, everyone's going to sign in. And then when you watch it, you go, ah, okay. But for me, that's why I'm going to put it still out there. I'm going to stick with 249 for me, because I just think, as I said, go through some of the fights that were on there. Gaethje Ferguson, no one saw that coming. That was for the title.
Gaethje Ferguson, he wants to win this, doesn't he?
It was, come on. I mean, who saw Gaethje dominating Ferguson across that? And also, I just want to chuck in there, when we're talking about little moments that happen that aren't relevant to the fight, but they're just something that comes afterwards, the best bit of corner advice we've seen with Trevor Whitman and Gaethje, that was awesome. That little compilation of how he handles him in the corner is sick. Literally, Gaethje's there smiling, and Trevor just slaps around the face and say, "You be sharp as a motherfucker here. Don't get too." So he says to him something like, "What happened last time? You got too excited." And Gaethje goes, "Yeah, I got knocked out twice." <It's> like, exactly. So focus. Do this. Take 10% off your shots. There was so much on that fight that came from where it was amazing from all angles of mixed martial arts. Ngannou versus Rosenstroke, come on.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it was quick. Good fight. But it was one of the fights that, like, no one didn't want to sign into that. You knew someone was getting knocked out in under a minute. Like, it was never going to go much longer than that. And then also, Cejudo's retirement fight. This isn't just Cejudo beating Dominic Cruz. Bear in mind, Dominic Cruz was probably the most decorated bantamweight champ of all time. Cejudo goes in there, defends his belt, obviously, but also it's the fact that he's a double champ. Cejudo was this guy who kind of pretty much loads of people wanted to see lose. He just kept defying the odds. Cejudo was a spectacle through 2019 and 2020. He was one of the most up-and-coming rising fighters who just did so much for the sport. And then, as I said, to KO a guy like Cruz, and then after that say, yeah, I'm retiring now. I think, yeah, that is another moment from not just the fight actually happening, but from what came from that card that you think, yeah, that's, I'm going to remember that. And for me, that's what makes it card of the year.
I think I'm going to change my mind. Yeah.
Where are you going though? Which side?
I'm going your
come
side.
To the dark
side. Oh,
sure. Sorry, Hutto. Yeah.
I mean, me and Sean have won one. Liam, we kind of all drew on the first one, mate. So you've got, let's say, half a mark there, mate. Well done.
Yeah, I don't need your pity right now.
No, as I said, I think that's a fair pick as well. I genuinely think it's one of them guards that's insane. Calvin Cater as well, bear in mind. He's now going on to fight Holloway after an incredible knockout. You've still got Price in there. I know Price was part of your argument, so Luque and Price are in here as well. I think that's fair. Unless you want to carry on defending and try and change mine or Sean's mind.
Joe, I've been outvoted, but I'm sticking by my pick. Absolutely sticking by it. Best card of the year.
Right, so official announcement, who takes our best card of the year?
Yeah, fair enough. UFC 249 is officially the card of the year.
Sorry, yeah, whose pick was that originally?
Let's just move on. Yeah, that was courtesy of you, Jake. Well done. Well done.
No, we can move on. Trust me. Come on, move on.
Right, next one. Team of the year. Interesting one. So this is the collective team. We've kept the criteria very broad, so I think we may all come to very different conclusions here. Sean, who have you got for this?
I always stand by this team, right? No, it's not favouritism. For one, okay, it's not favouritism, but it has to be American Top Team. The Mountain Fighters, they supply every year, not just for the UFC, but like different organisations as well. You look at Masvidal, what was it, 48 hours or something to jump on the plane to Dubai to fight Usman?
Yeah.
Mike Brown is like one of the best coaches in the world. I've got to give him that, so I've got to give it American Top Team.
I would have to agree that Mike Brown is definitely one of the top coaches in the world. He's insane. Okay, well, I'm going to pitch in with mine then.
Here we go.
Ooh, I didn't realise, I'm just checking now about American Top Team. Douglas Lima comes from them as well.
Yeah.
Obviously had a very good year as well.
Yeah, fair.
Oh, imagine. I've won this. I've got to win this.
Hey, you haven't won this yet. Let me go away with this. Right. My pick of the year, for Team of the Year, would be City Kickboxing, the head coach, Eugene Barrowman, consistently considered for this award by most leading MMA outlets. And you can see why. The boys here never failed to put on an exciting fight and have given us some of the best fights in 2020 so far. Amongst their notable fighters and their wins, Adesanya, 2-0 in 2020, UFC middleweight champion, wins against Costa and Romero. Bear in mind, Costa Romero put Fight of the Year last year. Need I say more with him? Both these guys got Fight of the Year last year. He's had two title defences this year, 20-0. He faces Jan Blachowicz next March on March the 6th for the double champ status. He is, without a doubt, one of the biggest fighters in MMA at the moment across the entire world. Then you've also got Volkanovski training with them. He's 1-0 in 2020. UFC featherweight champ, and he won against Max Holloway. Max was known as the featherweight goat. Volkanovski is now 22-1. Another guy who comes from the team. Dan Hooker, 1-1 in 2020. But both fights were fights of the night. You had the fight with Paul Felder, which he won, and then the fight against Poirier, which he lost. And the Poirier fight was very, very close. Now he's facing the debuting Mike Chandler on January the 23rd. So he's got a massive fight there. That's three names that are huge. And then amongst that as well, you've still got people like Kai Kara France, who was 1-1 in 2020. Brad Riddell, who's 2-0 in 2020. And Carlos Olberg, who was 1-0 in 2020. He featured on the Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. That is 8-2 in 2020 major matchups. City Kickboxing have always and will always have my attention. I think 2021 starts well for them. Chandler and Hooker could very much put themselves in another pole position for maybe a title shot. If not, I think Adesanya could get them that third belt for the team, including obviously Volkanovski's and Adesanya's current belt, and pretty much have one of the all-time greatest fighters alumni with them. As I said, throughout their team, I think they've got some incredible fighters. And if you even just look at some of the guys they face, so Brad Riddell, now he's 9-1. He's one of my fighters to watch throughout pretty much all time at the moment. I think he's phenomenal. He beat Magomed Mustafiev, who is 15-2, and he was the one who beat Fiziev in his debut. And then he beat the 21-2 Alex Pahello by unanimous decision. So that's a 9-1 guy beating guys with a combined record of 36-4. He's insane. the rest of their team are insane. They've got so many good names, which is why they take my team of the year, especially through 2020.
Come on, Liam. Please, Liam.
Okay, my pick. Tiger Muay Thai. And I'm going for this. There's a few standouts among the team over the last year. Firstly, I think when you just look at their success rate in 2020, they've had an extraordinary consistency. But obviously, you can hold up Shevchenko, right, as their probably marquee fighter. I still maintain Shevchenko's the most likely female UFC champion to lose her title next. But that being said, she's still, without doubt, maintaining her position as the dominant flyweight in UFC. And additionally, you can pick out people like Damir Ismagulov. He hasn't fought in the UFC since 2019, fair enough, but he's got a 19-1 record. You know, that's the kind of thing they're doing with their fighters. You've got Petr Yan. I mean, he's a great fighter. He's got a lot of power. He's incredibly successful with a 15-1 record. Does he deserve to be champion? Can you really hold him up and say he's the best in the world? Probably not. And yet they've managed to coach him to a UFC world title. That, in my opinion, is incredible. And just looking down the list, there's obviously Antonina Shevchenko, who's, you know, she's doing all right, but she's, you know. But like Movsar Evloev, 13-0 record at the moment, won his last fight in the UFC in 2020.
It's Mike Grundy as well. Evloev looks very good.
Yeah, and of course we called him out earlier, Rafael Fiziev. He's also Tiger Muay Thai. So they've got, as well as just having a really consistent record, Brad Riddell as well. They've got several fighters who you could genuinely hold up and say not only are a couple of them current champions, but a few of them have the potential to be champions in the next couple of years. This is a team that, in my opinion, hands down, is doing the best things at the moment.
Hold up one second.
Yeah,
you said Brad Riddell in there.
Yep.
That's my boy. He's from City Kickboxing, all right? He's a coach.
I've got him as Tiger Muay Thai.
No. I believe. Oh, this
fight
is
to the death.
He's okay, right? He's changed his affiliation, but he fought last year for Tiger.
Well, I'm just going to sweep in there and steal one of your fighters from my side there. But I do agree that some of the names you've just picked out that are phenomenal, especially the Evloev. I think he was actually in my consideration for fighter to watch out for next year, because he is incredible. I must admit, he looks, I think he's 13-0 now. Mm. Beating a guy like Mike Grundy is literally known for how good he is at wrestling. I know so Cal Eleanor and some of like his mates used to train down at Liverpool team Calbon, and they all used to say that Mike Grundy was ridiculous. Apparently he was so good when they used to train down him. So for Evloev to literally dominate a guy like that, yeah, I must admit, they look very, very good. I mean, it's a hard one to pick out of this, because I think we've got some decent choices in there.
You do know Dustin Poirier is fighting McGregor soon, you know? Dustin Poirier comes out of American Top Gear.
I think this is what we've got to break down here, is what did they do in 2020? I mean, ooh. I gave you mine 8-2 with my guys. I mean, I can chuck Shane Young in there, but he did lose in 2020, so it doesn't help. But he's a big name. I mean, I do, looking at some of the fighters that come, obviously, Liam, you went through the fighters, I do hardly say they're very, very good, and then just looking at American Top Team's website, I mean, they do have some big old boys and decent names in it, but I think my issue with American Top Team is you've got people like Masvidal and that, who, yes, are one of the biggest names in sport, but a lot of them have lost their fights. Even JDS, he lost his fight. You've got a lot of the guys there who, yes, they are big names, huge teams, but have they done enough in 2020 to earn the award? Not just because they're big names, but because they've actually done things. For example, Tyron Woodley. I mean, he's made the America top team, and he's lost everything there. This is a hard one for me, really. I think we've got to look at Liam. What's the record of your boys?
We're going to look at all the records.
Right, I'm adding it up. I'm currently at 21-7, 22-7, 24-7, 25-7, 26-8, 26-9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 32-9, 32-10, 33-10. I'm nearly at the end now. So, yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it's
within the 30s.
Yeah.
Okay, I am going to cast my vote over to Liam because... although I think the 8-2 record from City Kickboxing is more impressive with their big name fighters, I do think you've named some big fighters coming out of that team. Fiziev, Evalev, Shevchenko, who you can't argue are some of the best in the UFC at the moment, and to then have a record of what, like 33-10 throughout 2020. They've had a busy year and some fantastic fighters producing some incredible matchups. So, Liam, you're going to take my vote there.
Yeah, he's going to take my vote too. Give it to Liam. Let's give him some sympathy. Come on.
Go on.
Oh,
Liam.
That's ruined it.
But in fairness, you're the only one to take unanimous decision vote. So.
Yeah,
fair enough.
So yeah,
I'll take it.
Yeah. No, very, very well. So the final announcement for Team of the Year, Liam.
Yep, Team of the Year goes to Tiger Muay Thai.
Right, I'm excited for this next category.
Yes, the next one is the 2021 One to Watch. Jake, you seem to have a lot of thoughts on this. Kick it off.
Right, first and foremost, I want slight mention to two guys here. And if you guys have picked these, I'm not going to let you have it. Right, Chimaev and Kevin Holland, because I don't think you can watch out for these guys because they're very much so on the radar now. Both these guys had a phenomenal 2020. They're both on lengthy win streaks, and I honestly think they are one or two fights away from a title shot at this stage. So can you necessarily say they are one to watch? That's like me saying, I don't know, Yoel Romero is one to watch in Bellator. No shit, Sherlock. So I picked a guy who I personally think might get a title shot in 2021 if he has a good run, and that guy is Factory X's Brandon Royval. Brandon made his UFC debut in 2020, and every single fight he's had has impressed me. He lost his last fight to Brandon Moreno, but I think if he won that, he would have been next in line to face Figueiredo, and I know that goes without saying, because Moreno obviously got the title shot after, but I think it's fair to say that if Royval hadn't been injured in that fight, in the Moreno matchup, then the fight would have gone on longer, and I don't think Moreno would have been able to agree to such a quick turnaround. Which I think is fair to say, because it was like 3 weeks after the fight. It was only that he got through like 4 minutes of the round, and then he dislocated his shoulder. So for me, he was unfortunate to lose to Moreno due to the injury, and then put in two incredible performances, both performance of the night bonuses against Kai Kara-France and Tim Elliott, who are incredibly tough opponents. Kai Kara-France is this up-and-coming fighter who everyone talks about is going to be a beast, and Tim Elliott was the former guy who used to compete on, what's it called? The Ultimate Fighter. I think he won it. Mm. So that's what I mean. Brandon Royval went in there and beat these guys. He's the former LFA flyweight champ. And we have seen some serious beasts come from LFA in recent years. Now, Royval has quit his full-time job recently to solely focus on training. And I think that gives him the tenacity, the power, and the skill. But also that unorthodox approach that he has, that he needs to succeed. And I honestly think if he gets off a win... If he gets a win, to kick off 2021... I think he might be next in line for a title shot. For me, I see the winner of Askar, Askarov, and Josef Benavidez getting Figueiredo, and then the loser getting Royval. And if Royval wins that, I think we're going to see him get a title shot. And as I said, I think that's where he's going to come into basically be a breakthrough fighter of 2021. Take it away, bitches.
No, you know why? I'm going to keep mine so sweet because he just stole mine. Yeah, I was thinking the same. I think he's going to go far, and I think that Brendan Moreno, I can't even say his name, but you know.
Brendan Moreno.
Moreno, yeah. That shoulder injury. It was going to go the same way, I think, but I think, yeah, he was a former LFA champion in the flyweight division, and I think he's actually going to go far in the next year.
So, who's your pick? Royval or Moreno?
Yeah, Royval. Yeah.
Ooh, Liam.
Interesting.
Go on.
Fair enough. I mean, I'm calling out a guy that you haven't vetoed, but we have mentioned him a bit already. Fiziev. You can really say that he's established because he's not been ranked, but just look at the year that he's had. I think he's without a doubt one of the big prospects in there. It's lightweight, isn't he, I think? And when you also consider the fact that the lightweight division right now is going to be blown wide open, because when you look at the rankings, you've got Khabib, who, okay, he might be tempted to fight once or twice more, but I don't think there's any certainty around that, considering why he's retiring. McGregor is only a money fighter. He'll come back once a year. And then you've got the likes of Ferguson, and in fact, the whole of the top five in that division, they're at their peak. You can argue they're perhaps coming down the other side now. So you've got this division that is looking for people to rise up. Yeah. And I think Fiziev fits the bill perfectly. He's a guy that in sort of 3 to 5 years, we're going to be looking on and saying he's potentially one of the legends of the division.
Well, I'm not going to change my view on it, but I will perk up on that and say that I do think Fiziev is definitely a guy to watch in 2021, because not only is he entertaining, like, anyone's going to tune into it, and everyone tuned in to watch him beat Moicano as well. Mm. After we saw his performance against Gekazi, I think everyone knew Mr. Matrix. Everyone knew who he was, and everyone wanted to see what he does next. And then to get your, third fight in the UFC against Renato Moicano and beat him in the fashion you do, that's incredibly impressive. So I do think that 2021, we will see him perk up probably into the top 10, maybe top 15. And I think there's a few fighters that we might see do that. In fact, I think Fiziev probably will be top... I don't want to say top five, just because how stacked the division is and how, like Liam, you've just said about some of the fighters in there. Mm. I don't think they're going to be taken out of that equation just yet. But I do definitely think 2021 will be the year that we see Fiziev enter that top 10, and definitely the higher end of the top 10 as well. Mm-hmm. Or should I say lower end, more like rank 6, etc. So yeah, that's a good shout. And there's just a couple more people that I want to give a shout out to. That they're guys that I think may have a great 2021. I don't think they're the one to watch. I don't think they're necessarily going to end up as a champion. But firstly, Jimmy Crute. I think if he can beat Johnny Walker, he goes 13-1, and we're coming off a KO over Modestus Bukauskas and Johnny Walker, two very up and coming guys who I think, if Crute can do that, that's surely worth a top 10 fight. And also a shout out to Otman Azatar. He's a guy who KO'd Karma Worthy and Teemu Pakkalin in scary fashion. They literally both were out cold. That sent him 13-0, I think. And once more, I think he's a force to be reckoned with. I think he was the Brave champion, Brave Combat Federation, who are also a good company coming up from, I think they fight from Bahrain. As I said, he looks a really good lightweight. And I think that if he can also get a top 15 guy, he may well KO them and chuck himself into the title picture by the end of 2021. So I think there are guys out there like Fiziev, Crute, and Azatar who potentially chuck themselves to the top of the rankings. But for me, the reason my fighter to watch out for in 2021 is Roy Val, is because I think he potentially might get a title shot. Mm-hmm. And I think he gives Figueiredo a hard fight, or anyone he fights a hard fight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a totally fair shout, actually, and I'm willing to back you on that one with Brandon Royval.
Yes,
oh, I'm honoured.
So I think lovely. That's it. It's official. Our 2021 one to watch is Brandon Royval.
Lovely.
And now we've got the two big ones. So let's dive into Fight of the Year. Sean.
It has to be Figueiredo, doesn't it? Has to be.
Does it though?
Oh no, man! See,
go on. Give us your reasons.
Oh, I don't even know where to start. Like, five rounds. It was a draw. for the title, and they were just non-stop. It was like one of the brutalest fights I've seen. Was it flyweight? It was flyweight. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Flyweight. Yeah. That is my fight of the year. It's a fight of the year. Yeah.
I mean, that was a hell of a fight. I'll give you that. It was a great fight. However, my pick comes a lot earlier in the year, in the form of the women's strawweight title fight in March between Weili Zhang and Joanna.
Lost. Yeah.
I mean, I can tell you now you've lost, but sure. Liam, tell us more.
I mean, it just watch the highlights. It's in my opinion, not just... I think that Rogan and co. did this fight a little bit of injustice when they were commentating on it, because they were calling it one of, if not the greatest, women's MMA fights of all time. I'd go one further and say it was potentially one of the greatest MMA fights I've ever seen. I think it had everything. These two were so perfectly matched. And it's almost like everything aligned in this fight. And you had 25 minutes of two fighters at their absolute best going at it. It was a bloodbath. the determination, the grit, the resilience of the two fighters, it was unreal. And I maintain I've not seen anything like it. And I think this is why women's MMA deserves a lot more attention, because it was just unreal.
Yep. I mean, I will give Sean his due. Figueiredo Moreno was a good fight. Like,
close
no
seconds.
Doubt about that.
Absolutely close second.
Yeah. I have to admit, with that fight, I think it shocked us, because not only did Moreno come in there and obviously do bits, like, it was... I ruled Moreno completely off on this fight. I think he's got a chance. And Moreno went in there and absolutely he put Figueiredo through his paces. And there was times where I thought, we're going to see a new champion. Even at the end of that, I tweeted saying, I think we're going to see a new champion. Obviously, it didn't go that way. It was a draw. But no one expected that. It was a huge fight. It was such a quick turnaround. I think, as well, Figgy drawing that makes it the quickest title defence in UFC history, I think. But either way, I do agree that fight was insane. I think it had everything we wanted to see in a fight. Of course, there's going to be a bloody butt. but the one thing I would say is that fight definitely put more interest in the flyweight division. I think you can say that Moreno gained thousands of fans because of that, mm-hmm. and it's made us now want to see a Moreno Figueiredo 2. And overall, I think it's made us actually have some more interest in the flyweight division. But for me, it can only be one. Wiley Zhang's incredible women's strawweight title defense against the former champ Joanna Jacek was just incredible. Liam, you hit it. Everything you said hit the nail on the head for me. It is genuinely my second favorite fight of all time, not just in the women's division. It is my second favorite fight of all time. It just produced an absolute bloodbath. Everything about it was just incredible. They absolutely went for it and produced a matchup that will go down in history. Like, who wants to fight these two now? Because we saw so much from this. We saw how Joanna very much still has it going. She can do it against the very best. And we saw Zhang tried and tested. And she came away with a win against an incredibly tough opponent. Because there was times that Zhang was hurt. There was times Joanna was hurt. But these girls just did not go down. It was amazing. Even Joanna's face afterwards, for God's sake, she went full ET on us. Like, that photo looks faked.
That forehead is something else, right?
Mental.
You could literally land a plane on it. It was brilliant. They put everything in a striking match that we want to see. They've had beautiful footwork, hard shots, great technique, insane combinations. It had it all. And the other thing I liked is, even at times, the fight became sluggish because these two tanks just wanted to put the other one out. Mm-hmm. And also, you have to consider how decorated these two fighters are. They're both multi-award winning champions. Zhang is 21-1. Her only loss is disputed at the very start of her career, so we could actually be talking about an undefeated fighter really here. I know that's harsh to say, because then you can say the same about people like Cyborg, who only lost at the start of their career. But it's something to do with Zhang's loss. Apparently it was an amateur bout, but it's now being classed as a professional one because it was her opening bout or something like that. But either way, it's actually disputed that her loss isn't meant to be a loss. But then you've got JJ, one of the all-time best, defended the title 5 times, undefeated at 14-0. She really has fought the best of the best. She's had an incredible career, and she's never stepped down from a challenge. All of her losses have come from basically top challengers, and she has to go down as one of the pioneers of women's MMA and MMA overall, European MMA as well. This fight for me was without a doubt my 2020 fight of the year. They landed something like 200 strikes each and threw something like 400 strikes. Neither girl dropped at all despite taking a considerable amount of damage. And as you said, close second with Figgy Moreno. But for me, there's no doubt it takes it.
Yeah, and I think that the Moreno and Figueiredo fight brought a lot that perhaps the Wiley and Joanna fight didn't. I think it was entertaining for a whole number of different reasons. Some of the controversy and just... I think just how impressive Figueiredo was, just turned things around so quickly, having fought in the previous pay-per-view. And there was a lot more surprise in that fight, that Moreno took a fight to him as much as he did. I think we were all kind of expecting or hoping for something big with Zhang and Joanna, and they delivered more than I think we ever expected. which is why it's my choice. But definitely a lot to be said for Figueroa's fight.
Well, I just wanted to say once more, just a couple of honourable mentions. This is just for a fight. If anyone wants to recap a sick fight to watch for the year, honourable mentions to Shane Burgos versus Josh Emmett, July 20th. That yes. fight was incredible. And then the aforementioned June 27th, Dan Hooker versus Dustin Poirier fight was also insane. Both fights, which was just slug, what's it called? Standard bang, where they just didn't stop. And there was blood, there was big punches, there was something about them fights as well that just produced holy shit moments. and they are the fights that we look out for, really. But I think hand it over to Liam. What is our fight of the year?
Yeah, I think we have decided the 2020 fight of the year is Weili Zhang versus Joanna. I'm not going to pronounce her surname.
Jacek.
Yes. There we go. Thank you. And that's that. And I think an honourable silver goes to Figueiredo Moreno.
Oh, wow. I guess silver.
So now it's the biggest one that we need to decide now. It's Fighter of the Year. And I'm going to dive straight into this because it segues nicely from the previous category. In my opinion, this has to go to Deiveson Figueiredo. Oh. And I say that because I'm a convert. So earlier on in the year, it was the vacant title, wasn't it? Because Cejudo gave up the belt. And it was him and Benavidez in the first title fight. And Figgy didn't make weight. He came in a couple of pounds over mm-hmm. over the weight. So even if he won the fight, he didn't get the belt. If he lost the fight, Benny got the belt. So, but he destroyed Benavidez. And that was a point that I thought, okay, you know what, like a couple of pounds doesn't make that much difference. He still annihilated the guy. And then when they rebooked the fight a couple of months later, he obviously made weight and then did the same thing. I mean, he, fair dues to Benavidez, he passed out. He was that determined not to tap. But what a performance. And then to go on and defend twice in the same year, not to mention in back-to-back pay-per-views, the guy, in my opinion, has to be the fighter of the year.
Sean.
Sean, please,
you seem to question it, so go on.
Right, I've got two. Well, I can't have two, I've only had one on. Right.
Mate, pitch them both, go on.
Right, figure it out, like you just said, like, he was just coming in, he's a good fighter, like he's fucking a mint fighter. Was he 21-1 was it?
Yep, no? I think he's now, yep.
Yeah. But nah. My fighter has to be Kevin Holland. He has to be. He's on a 5-win streak for one. Mm-hmm. And I think he's just like a fan favourite, and I would like to see him fight Chimaev.
That would be a hell of a fight, yeah.
I'd love to see that fight. Yeah, but Kevin Holland has to be main, like 5-win streak, like KOs. He went to AM decision with Darren Stewart, that's right.
Darren Stewart, he beat, Joaquin Buckley, obviously. Jacare Souza. Who was his win before Souza?
He beat Darren Stewart.
Ontiveros. Yeah, that's right, aye. Submission. Okay. Kevin Holland's my fighter of the year.
Well, you did mention a good fighter of the year there, because I know who it's going to be now, because I've got the decided vote. And I have to tell you,
please.
You've both said it, though, because you also said Figueiredo. I don't get me wrong, mate. I totally agree. Kevin Holland had an incredible year. 5-0 was insane. But for me, what Figueiredo did throughout the year was just incredible. He won and defended the UFC flyweight title. He recorded the fastest title defense in UFC history, and as you said, Liam, the quickest turnaround for pay-per-view bouts. That was 3 weeks, I think it was, or 21 days, or... Well, 3 weeks is 21 days, so I'm... But it was either 20 days or 22 or something like that. He beat Joseph Benavidez, one of the all-time flyweight greats, twice, both by finishes. And let's be honest, like Liam, you were saying about the first bout, yes, he came in overweight, and also in the bout, there was a clash of heads, which made you think, shit, maybe it's a bit fluky.
Yeah.
So what a way to prove that wasn't a fluke.
Yeah.
The second time around, what was it, knocked him down 3 or 4 times, and then is the only man to ever submit him. Like, that is so impressive, because that was one of the other things we questioned with Figueiredo, is does he have the grappling ability? and he proved that he does, especially against someone who pretty much is considered one of the top three flyweights of all time. Then he goes on and beats Alex Perez with a fantastic slick submission after that insane position reversal. Because it's one of them things as well, you've got to take them into account. You've got to take in their moments, like, do you know when Demetrius Johnson armbarred Ray Borg by lifting him up in the air, basically suplexing him into an armbar? Well, the same goes. Figueiredo did an amazing reversal in the fight against Perez that will be remembered. And then he goes on and puts a Fight of the Year contender versus Brandon Moreno just a few weeks back. 2020 was a great year for Figueiredo. Four fights, 3 wins, 1 draw. He is the undisputed Fight of the Year for me. There's also this concept of now a super fight. So for me, he is a super fight now. It's not about if he gets a super fight. Figueiredo is one. Imagine Cejudo or Garbrandt challenging Figueiredo. Who doesn't want to see that? And what I like about that is it's no longer the underdog going into this fight. It's no longer like Figueiredo, like Cejudo's coming back being the super fight. As I said, for me, Figueiredo is that super fight now. We know what Cody Garbrandt can do in there, and we know that he likes a striking matchup. So if he went in hot-headed, you'd put your money on Figueiredo to land the knockout, I think. And then Cejudo, if he was coming back after less time off and less defences for Figueiredo, then I would think, yeah, maybe you give it to Cejudo. But now he's coming into Figueiredo's turf. He is now the established champion of the world, and he's proven it by beating some of the very best. Cejudo has only lost to Demetrius Johnson and Josef Benavidez. Figueiredo beat Benavidez twice in crazy fashion. So I think now Cejudo or Garbrandt, if they challenge Figueiredo, they are the ones who potentially go in as that underdog, not Figueiredo anymore. And for me, I cannot wait to see what 2021 holds for him. He is my 2020 Fight of the Year.
Yeah, I'd love to see Figueiredo and Cejudo.
Oh, cool. That'd be
incredible. That'd be incredible. Yeah. I would prefer that than Garbrandt. Yeah. I love Garbrandt. He's top fighter for me, but nah, just the idea of Figueiredo Cejudo, it would just cement for me who probably is the best flyweight of all time. I don't think you can discount Demetrius Johnson, but you can definitely say that bout would just be absolutely blockbuster. It would just be, when I say a super fight, it's not just about having a main event. It's about having the fight that's going to be remembered for a long time, and I think Cejudo Figueiredo would do that. Mm-hmm. So, Liam, who is our Fighter of the Year?
Yeah, so the 2020 Fighter of the Year is Deivson Figueiredo. And I've just got a note, actually. This come up about a day or two back. I saw it on Twitter. It was Jan Błachowicz. He's pretty much confirmed that there's going to be a light heavyweight title fight between him and Adesanya.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's pretty much done on March 6th, I believe, isn't it?
Yep, which is going to be incredible.
Yep.
So I feel like we need to call that one out.
Well, as I say, I love the fight because Jan Błachowicz was going to be my Fighter of the Year, but it was only until I saw that he's only had 2 wins in 2020, I think. I think his third win was back in December last year, so he didn't get that win this year, which is why he didn't get my Fighter of the Year, basically, because if not, he would be there. Jan Błachowicz has really made an incredible name for himself now, in the fact that he's always been a well-known fighter, but it's something crazy, like since 2014, or it might be 2017, he went something like 4-4 in the UFC, or 4-6 in the UFC, and now he's gone to like 8-1 in his last fight, so there's a crazy stat out there that just shows the turnaround of Błachowicz, and he looks awesome. I mean, the knockout of Reyes was incredibly impressive, but also the knockout of Corey Anderson for me was probably more. We know Corey Anderson could be knocked out, but Corey Anderson had changed his style of fighting. Corey Anderson was on like a decent win streak, maybe 3 or 4 fight win streak, and basically Corey Anderson went out saying like that he's this guy who he. I always use this example, but Anderson had always said that he changed his style of fighting to not suit the fans anymore because he tried too much for a knockout. So he ended up saying, no, fuck you guys, I'm going to go fight the way I think I should fight. And that's where he started winning. So it's almost like this shit, Corey Anderson has the resurgence of him, the revival of this amazing kind of up-and-coming light heavyweight. And then Błachowicz knocked him out in just... I mean, the way he dropped in that fight was awful. And then obviously goes on to win the title. He is seriously, seriously impressive. And I think a fight with Adesanya is once more a super fight. But it's so good for both of them because obviously, if if Adesanya wins it, he gets the double champ status. And he gets the idea that, he pretty much goes, puts himself down as probably in that conversation for the GOAT again. But then if Blachowicz wins it, I mean, you beat this undefeated fighter. You are the champion. You defend your title. And then what else is left for you? Surely it's got to be someone like John Jones, or just continuing to cement that you are the best fighter. It's a brilliant fight.
And I feel like before we wrap up the podcast, we also need to call out the fact that on Twitter recently, we conducted a series of polls because we thought we'd try and find out who we thought was your pound for pound champion of champions in the UFC. So we pitted all of the UFC champions against each other in one-to-one polls. And it probably is no surprise to anyone, right, that the winner was Khabib, who has to be an honorary mention as well for Fighter of the Year, purely because of the fact that he's incredible at 29-0, proved himself yet again in a title fight against Gaethje, wasn't it, this year?
Gaethje.
And under the circumstances that he did it as well, particularly tough. Having lost his father, who was obviously one of his biggest influences in his coach. So I think Khabib deserves a shout out this year. I think we take it for granted that he's going to go in there and dominate. But you know, he deserves respect, right?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. It was a nice note to his father there, because we had said about this that we don't want to talk about that too much in his pre-fight with Gaethje, because sometimes it's not needed, and he just kept getting asked that. But there's no doubt that you can't say that Abdulmanap was an incredible coach, an incredible father, and basically that was going to get some light on. Of course it was, but it deserved the light, the respect that it got. Not, it doesn't deserve kind of to be used, I guess, as a narrative. It could be, as you said, we do take it for granted. Every single year, he's just incredible. 29-0, what can you say? If he has one more fight, he will go 30-0. I have no doubt that he's going to win that fight as well.
GSP.
I would love that. I think the GSP fight would make so much sense. It would be great. Yeah. But either way, as you said, he's just such an honourable guy to mention. I think the only issue is he just doesn't fight enough.
Yeah.
And I get why. You only want to defend your title when you need to. And on top of that, I think Khabib gets about 6 million a fight. Now, they've got that contract with Abu Dhabi where they have to go back every year, I think, for 5 years. Khabib's always going to be a headliner.
Yeah.
Always. And that's because, as I said, he gets about 6 million a fight. So the UFC can't afford to put him on 3-4 fights a year, and he probably doesn't give a shit about doing that either. he'll want a fight a year, as I said, defend his belt, and basically cement himself where he deserves to be. And that's what I loved about the end of his Gaethje fight. That's what he said to the UFC. He said it is his retirement, but all he wants from them, give him what he deserves and give him that number one pound for pound spot.
Yeah.
And he got it, and that's what our poll produced as well. It genuinely is incredible to see that that's where he got. And I think obviously there's a difference between talking about UFC champions and talking about who the overall GOAT is, but I would still, maybe that's another poll we need to run between people like John Jones, GSP, Khabib. We need to run one where it's the all-time best. And I do think we might see Khabib. I would be surprised if he lost. But put him up against someone like Jones.
Ooh. Yeah.
Getting spicy.
Exactly.
Okay.
No, good mention though, mate.
Do you know what? Before we go, I want to put you both on the spot. Who do you think is going to be a new champion in 2021?
You go first, Jeff. Go on, lad.
Well, let me have a quick look at the rankings. Because I've already said, obviously, Brandon Royval is one of the guys that I genuinely think will be it. Or at least be competing for it.
Poirier.
So let's have a little... Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
Go on, Sean.
Ooh, yeah. I reckon Poirier's going to demolish McGregor. Ooh, you hit it first. Demolish McGregor. Ooh.
Wow.
Then go on to fight for a belt.
Ooh. I mean, he's already beat Gaethje, hasn't he? So that's not a bad shout. I do think that he could be...
Imagine that, beat McGregor.
I think McGregor fight's going to be very close. I think Poirier's learned so much since their last bout, and I think it's going to be a hard fight. I mean, I'm just looking at the rankings now. So, a few names. Askar Askarov, I think if he beats Benavidez, I think he might beat Figueiredo. I think Ortega, I think Ortega might beat Volkanovski. I think he's got the submission skills that we haven't necessarily seen Volkanovski tested against. And then, I don't think Chimaev's going to end up champion. I honestly don't. I think Usman beats him. People are going to think I hate Chimaev. I honestly don't. He's my fighter of the year, I promise you. I just don't like the hype.
I agree.
I'm just looking now. I think Glover Teixeira, if he had a go against Yan, I think Glover puts him through a very hard fight. Then, Rose.
Oh, Rose, aye.
Yeah, I think Rose might give Zhang a very, very tough bout.
What about John Jones? You reckon he'll come back and fight for a title?
I do, but I don't know if it'll be next year. That's my issue.
I feel like Ngannou is going to get the next shot of the title.
And he takes it, yeah.
He could win it. He could win it, yeah.
He absolutely could win it. In the first fight with Ngannou Miocic, there was one moment where Miocic just ducked under a punch, but I remember thinking, you just missed that. If Ngannou caught that, there was no doubt to me Miocic was dropping. So no, I do agree that Ngannou could be also in there because he is once more a beast.
So if Ngannou wins that fight, what about John Jones versus Ngannou?
I think Jones beats Ngannou.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Jones would prefer to fight Ngannou than he would fight Miocic.
Yeah.
Miocic is better all around, and I think Ngannou is, especially the speed John Jones has, because I think John Jones is 6'4". Mm-hmm. Like, he's a big old boy still for light heavyweight. So he could go in there against someone like Ngannou and just use his range and just basically piece him up, and we've seen Ngannou break down throughout a fight, whereas obviously Miocic has that slightly faster frame and very, very good wrestling ability.
I think as well he's a very tactical fighter, and the last thing you want to do is be the challenger in a title fight against someone like Stipe, because if he needs to grind down a decision, I think he will, and that's certainly not the kind of debut at heavyweight that Jones is going to want. So I think if he had to choose, he would definitely rather Ngannou.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right then, let's all do our final pick then on who will be a champ next year. My one is going to be Askar Askarov.
I'm going to stick with Poirier. I don't know why, I just say it's Poirier.
Cool.
I love your shout on Glover Teixeira, so I'm going him.
Oh, no. If you get that by next year's awards, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to cry. I think that's also a very, very good shout.
Well, all right. Well, yeah. I think it's been a long one today. I think it's needed. But shall we run down who's won what awards, yeah?
No.
Oh, go on.
So,
let's do a little tally here.
Best debut, we unanimously went for Khamzat Chimaev. Best finish, obviously, we all went for Buckley's jump-spinning back kick of Kasanganai. The biggest letdown went to Sean, wasn't it, for the Jai Herbert and Trinado fight?
Lovely, yep.
Card of the year, Jake, that went to you for UFC 249. Team of the year, I reclaimed some bragging rights because I swayed you over to Tiger Muay Thai.
Mm-hmm.
The 2021 one to watch turned out to be Brandon Royval, thanks to Jake's suggestion.
Come on.
Yeah, I said that too.
And Sean seconded. Yeah. I'll edit that out, don't worry, Sean. Fight of the year, majority decided that was Zhang and Joanna. Though honorary mention to Figueiredo Marino.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, fighter of the year goes to Deuce and Figueiredo.
So I think just adding them up, if they're not the ones that we both agree on, or that the two people put forward. Jake has 2 points, and you guys have one. Oh, boys, I'm so sorry.
Wait, no, I have two.
No, you're not having Roy Val.
No,
you're not having it. It's mine. No, boys, I think looking over it all, I think we've all got joint. I think it's one pick for each person, and then if not, it was unanimously kind of both mentioned, really.
We're all winners. We're all winners on
this
podcast.
We're all winners, yes, Steve. There's no losers. Right,
no,
Jay?
We are all winners. It's been absolutely lovely. So,
yeah, it's been
thank you very much for putting this together, mate. It's been a good laugh.
No, it's been a good way to wrap up 2020. And, of course, UMMA will be back with you, Jake, at the helm, reliably so. Well, we got Fight Island, haven't we, in January?
Yes, we do indeed.
Holland. Amazing.
Yeah, we got a midweek card, I believe. We got the 17th, and then I think it's the 23rd, or is it the 18th and 23rd? I can't remember, but there's a Wednesday card and a Saturday card in there. So me and that must be 17th and 21st. That's it. Me and Sean will be sure to sink our teeth into that.
Oh yes,
should be very good. And Liam, I mean, obviously it's been good fun having all three of us on the show. So if there's ever a point you want to jump all in, then we'll have a three man go at it.
Absolutely.
That would be great, guys. As I said, it's been good fun. And anyone listening to it as well, we're going to be changing a bit of our format for next year as well. We're just going to be introducing some new things, basically more topical discussions to the show, and maybe we'll chuck in more awards in there. So if there's anything that anyone wants us to start covering or try and get some more news into it or some interviews, let us know and we will get that done.
Absolutely. But thanks everyone for listening and take care.